Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. U.S. Attorney David DeVillers on Tuesday outlined the racketeering case against Republican Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder and four others in what DeVillers described as probably the largest public corruption case in state history.
Make no mistake, these allegations are bribery, pure and simple. This was a quid pro quo. This was pay to play.
An affidavit alleges that Householder controlled a $61 million enterprise to both enrich himself and help finance campaigns for House members recruited to help him pass a $1 billion bailout for two nuclear power plants in Ohio. DeVillers said that the one-year covert investigation is now overt and far from over. Laura Bischoff, state government reporter for the Dayton Daily News, broke the story yesterday. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hey, Ann, glad to be with you.
I want to refer to Mr. DeVillers again. He outlined the conspiracy this way.
The conspiracy was to pass and maintain a $1.5 billion bailout in return for $61 million in dark money that were used for various things. One, to line the pockets of the defendants. Two, to build a power base for Larry Householder, and three, to further the conspiracy, that is, to further the affairs of this enterprise.
Laura, I'm just kind of thinking about that outline. It all begins with dark money, the kind of thing that mere mortal reporters don't have access to.
Oh, if only we had subpoena power, you know. I think, the dark money is so dark in circumstances like this that really the only ones who have a flashlight are the, you know, the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And I think that it makes this case study makes a strong argument about why dark money can be so damaging.
We are going to be talking to the executive director of Common Cause Ohio later in the show about the implications of all of that. It's also about more than dark money, because the entity that was created to funnel this money was supposed to be one thing, and it operated very differently. What was that?
Well, let's start out by saying that all of these allegations in the 82-page complaint that was unsealed yesterday, these are allegations that have to be proven in court by the government.
Right.
And, you know, the five men, Larry Householder and the four associates, made their initial appearances in federal court, but they didn't, federal court works a little bit differently, and they have not yet entered pleas to these charges. So, you know, it's only allegations at this point, but wow, what's like some whopper allegations.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying is that Generation Now, which is this 501c4 organization that does not have to disclose its donors, that it actually was in firm control, like that the speaker and his associates, including Jeff Longstreth, who's one of the guys who's facing this racketeering charge, that they controlled the this organization, and that this organization was funded by Company A, which everyone assumes is the Akron-based First Energy or First Energy's spinoff, First Energy Solutions, which emerged from bankruptcy as Harbor Energy. So they're saying that this was basically the bank for the Householder enterprise to elect pro-Householder candidates into legislative seats so that he could win the speakership, defeat his rival Ryan Smith, build up his power base, get House Bill 6 passed, and then when there was a referendum effort to, you know, see if the voters would block implementation of House Bill 6, to defend House Bill 6 and make sure that the referendum never made it to the state ballot, which it did not.
Let's talk about the other four people who were arrested yesterday. Matt Borges, former head of the Ohio Republican Party. It's not his first rodeo on this score. Tell us about him.
So Matt, Matt was a really successful state party chairman. He has had an interesting path. He started out, I remember he was on staff for then state treasurer Joe Dieters, mm-hmm. and he got into some ethical issues. I think in 2004, he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor of giving preferential treatment to some investment brokers who wanted to do business with Dieters' office. Borges's record on that case has since been expunged. And, he made his way back into politics. He worked as, I think he worked on Dave Yost's campaign. He worked for a couple congressional campaigns. He consulted for the National Republican Congressional Committee. And then he served as the chair of the Ohio Republican Party from April of 13 to January of 17. He actually, he was supported by John Kasich for that mm-hmm. position. Mm-hmm. He replaced Kevin DeWine, who was not seen as a Kasich guy.
Yep.
And then, come January of 17, because Kasich had been running for president, Borges was, really in his camp. And when Donald Trump won the nomination, Borges's support for Donald Trump was seen as less than vociferous. Mm-hmm. And so the Trump team mounted a campaign to oust Borges. And so Borges was he got beat out by Jane Timken, who's the current chair of the Ohio Republican Party.
Neil Clark, he goes back over 30 years. He was executive director, secretary of the Ohio Senate with the Republicans. He's a longtime, extremely successful Republican-leaning lobbyist.
Right, and you're right. He's been around for a super long time. I think he's like 35, almost 40 years mm-hmm. in Ohio politics. He's one of these multi-client lobbyists, meaning he's an independent guy who picks up,
clients.
Yeah, and so he's had, he's been. He lobbies, interestingly, for Ohio's largest public pension system, mm-hmm. the Ohio Employees Retirement System, public OPERS. He also lobbies for, I think, a bunch of gambling interests. He lobbied for some payday lending interests. And at one point, he back in like 1984, he left the Ohio Senate staff, and he teamed up with Democrat Paul Tipps, mm-hmm. and they became kind of a lobbying powerhouse.
Right.
And they had a bitter falling out in, I think, 2008. And then Clark started another firm called Grant Street Consultants.
Jeff Longstreth, more behind the scenes, but a longtime associate of Larry Householder.
Yeah, he has a lower public profile, but the complaint that was unsealed yesterday shows that he's been in regular contact with Larry Householder for years. That was based on telephone records that the FBI got access to, and they describe him as the guy who really was a signatory on a bunch of different. Bank accounts, including the Generation Now accounts. So, and that he was the one who worked on the messaging to pass House Bill 6 and to defend House Bill 6. But you're right, he's more of a behind-the-scenes guy.
And then Juan Cespedes, I've never heard of him before, but he is a member, correct me if I'm wrong, of the Ohio Civil Rights Commission?
Yes, he's a current member of the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, and I believe he was, I think John Kasich appointed him to the Ohio Arts Council, but I think that his term on that board has expired.
Okay.
But he started a lobbyist at the Oxley Group, and I think he's currently registered as a lobbyist for Energy Harbor, which is formerly known as First Energy Solutions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the news that Republican Speaker of the Ohio House, Larry Householder, and four others yesterday were charged with racketeering in connection with a $60 million+ bribe made in exchange for a $1 billion+ nuclear plant bailout. My guest right now is the reporter that broke the story yesterday, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Actually, mostly questions. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a lot of ground to cover today. Governor DeWine and the head of the Ohio Republican Party have called for Householder to resign. Correct me if I'm wrong, Laura, but Householder's members have not yet called for him to resign. Can he continue to serve as speaker while this plays out?
Well, I think you're right. Like Jane Timken, Mike DeWine, John Husted, Dave Yost, Larry Obhoff.
Of the Senate, minority, Senate House president.
Of the Senate president, the Senate minority leader, Kenny Yuko, House minority leader, Amelia Sykes. They've all called for him to resign.
Okay.
I'm told that there's been a couple of Republicans who've come out also within his caucus calling for him to resign.
Okay.
I think they're governed by, you know, the Ohio Constitution, House rules, and like parliamentary rules. And one of my tasks today when I finish speaking to your listeners is to kind of dig into the details about, you know, how one removes someone from the speaker, from a leadership role, but also from the House. If one is convicted of a felony, it's an automatic removal. But I think that there are other mechanisms for removal as well. I think there's like one way to do it with a simple majority vote, and then another way requires, I think, 66 votes. But again, I don't have all the details at this point. The House Democrats have called for him to resign, so that's 39 votes right there, 38-39. And then I think at least two Republicans have called for him to move out. So you just need like another baker's dozen Republicans, and they may be at the threshold.
There is a preliminary hearing in August. Is that the next step?
I'm not sure. I think attorneys for Borges and Cespedes, I think that they waived that hearing. There could be other court happenings between now and then, you know, more to come on that.
And the U.S. Attorney DeVille said that this investigation is far from over. He said that now the covert side of it is done. The overt side begins. Tell us what you know about what he means by that.
Well, so, you know, if you look at the complaint, it's really interesting because, you know, it's kind of like, well, how did the feds find all this out? And if you read through the complaint, it shows that they have lobbyists and other people who were caught on recording during like dinner club meetings and elsewhere. They subpoenaed bank records. They looked at text messages and phone records. As far back as like January of 18, they have recorded phone calls. So they've been listening for quite a while. And so I think what they're probably doing at this point is showing with a lot of detail and force, like this is what we got so far. And it could open the floodgates for more people coming forward to say, kind of like, you know, protecting their own skin. To come forward and supply whatever information they have. And if they don't come forward, of course, the Millers and I think the FBI special agent in charge of the Cincinnati field office, Chris Hoffman, said, you know, we got a lot of agents who are super busy right now, and they're out in the field and they're delivering subpoenas.
They said that the entire investigation was triggered by somebody coming forth.
I didn't hear that part in the press conference yesterday. I do know that the DeVillers kind of applauded what he considered to be, you know, brave people who came forward. I do know that in the complaint, it said that during the House Bill 6 referendum effort, that Matt Borges approached somebody in the on the referendum side, mm-hmm. and offered a $15,000 bribe to this person, and that person got upset and turned to the FBI, and okay. that was I think that was probably a key turning point for the feds. Because apparently after that guy, that informant,
yeah.
Wore a wire when he met with, or else they listened to his phone conversations, or both, whenever he met with Borges.
And then that gave them the ammo they needed to get the subpoenas and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it might have opened the door to more of that kind of stuff, more of the covert information gathering.
I wanted to talk about the people that Larry Householder helped get elected allegedly using the funds from that enterprise. There were 21 candidates. DeVillers said he was very successful. Do we know how those candidates now, I think all of whom were elected, probably most of whom, I don't know, but many of whom, maybe all of whom, voted for House Bill 6, how they're responding to this?
I think the affidavit said all but one voted for House Bill 6, and that all of those who were supported by the Householder Enterprise with Generation Now money voted for him for Speaker. And, you know, I learned a long time ago, like, trying to figure out what's going on in a legislative leadership fight mm-hmm. is like, you know, trying to figure out which grain of sand is where on the beach. Like, mm-hmm. it's constantly shifting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may call all your sources and try and get an idea of where things are, but it's going to change minute by minute. And I think that this week is going to be really crucial to see who stands by Householder. And then who decides that it's time to cut ties.
And any Democrats tied up in this at all that you know of?
Not that I know of.
Because they couldn't have passed the legislation without Democratic help, right?
Right. Democrats did supply some of the votes. I don't remember off the top of my head what the vote tally was, but it was a tight vote, to the point where, you know, they needed to the House needed to come back into session to agree to Senate changes to the bill. Mm-hmm. And there were some of the lawmakers were out of town at some conference in Chicago, and there was a request made to use the state plane to fly out, pick
That's
those
right.
lawmakers up, and fly them back. And somebody tipped me off about that. I wrote about it, and then like seconds later, they canceled the request for
Never
the plane.
Never mind. Jeremy Pelzer of Cleveland.com is reporting that both Democrats and Republicans are preparing to introduce legislation to repeal House Bill 6.
Right. There was a co-sponsor request that went out, I think, from Laura Linnis and Mark Romanchuk, to Republicans. I think that went out this morning to repeal it. I think there's on the Senate side, Sean O'Brien, who's a Democrat from Eastern Ohio. He and another guy are calling for it. I think some of the environmental groups that, you know, there was a very strange coalition yeah. of opponents of House Bill 6, and it was like environmental groups didn't like how the renewable energy standards were being gutted. It was free market groups like the Buckeye Institute that didn't like how it was giving preference to certain utilities. Mm-hmm. And then there was also like the natural gas oil companies that, you know, use a different fuel to generate power, didn't like how the nuclear plants owned by First Energy Solutions were going to be given an advantage. So it was a strange combination. So now we're hearing like the environmental groups and some of the free market groups like Buckeye Institute are also calling for repeal of House Bill 6.
Right. Well, let's see. Let's take a call. Madeline in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, is it Madeline or Madeline?
Madeline.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have two questions. The first one's probably easier. I read in the Dispatch that the judge did not require any bail to be posted. I thought that was kind of curious. My other question was, I heard that Mr. Householder was really, really interested in putting forward at some point later on in the legislative session a change so that legislators would be investigated not by the Franklin County prosecutor but by the county prosecutor in the districts that they represent. And I was just wondering if you had any comment on that.
Okay, in terms of the bail issue, all five men were released on bond with conditions such as their travel is limited to the Southern District of Ohio, which is 44 counties, unless they get prior approval from the court. They, you know, can't have contact with other people involved in the case. The other thing, they had to surrender any firearms that they have. Having bond with conditions is like your own recognizance bond with conditions is not unusual. None of the five men have any kind of prior record. Typically bail or bond is designed, you would not give it if you think that they're a flight risk or a danger to the public. Otherwise, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty, and there you have it. And then in terms of this, I remember the issue you're referring to, that there was some bill that was proposed that would change whether or not the Franklin County prosecutor handled ethics issues and other matters, or if it would be in their home districts. And I don't know where Householders stood on that bill, and I don't know what the status of it is.
Madeline, thanks a lot for that call. We've got some emails. Let me see if any of them are good for you. Sherry asks, will they be releasing the names of the 21 people on Team Householder? That's public record, right? I mean, we know who he was helping. Do we not, Laura?
Yeah, we know. I mean, that's all. You can track that down through campaign finance reports and public records. I don't have the 21 off the top of my head, but, you know.
But that was pretty common knowledge even at the time, that what he was doing, and it was ostensibly only just to become speaker. This other alleged conspiracy wasn't, well, it might have been in the twinkle in somebody's eye, but nobody knew about it. And then she also asks, did he pay for the house in Florida with these taxpayer funds? The Dispatch reported that Householder was behind on tax payments on his Florida house, and the affidavit alleges he used $100,000 of that bribe money to pay off those taxes, right?
I looked at some of the property records in Collier County, Florida, and I found that he owns a condo in Naples. I think it was previously in his name and his mother's name, and it's now just in his name. And there were some renovations started on that property not that long ago. I didn't find anything in terms of back taxes.
Okay.
He was sued by a bank in Alabama. And there was a pretty, it was Householder was sued, and then a couple of entities, and it was a pretty big judgment. And I think Householder's part of the affidavit details this, is that Householder's portion of that judgment was satisfied and released, and the feds are alleging that Generation Now money was used to do so.
Laura Bischoff, I know I have to let you go. I thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, it's been great talking, and I'm really curious how this is all going to play out in the coming weeks and months.
Laura Bischoff is state government reporter for the Dayton Daily News. She broke the story yesterday that the Republican Speaker of the Ohio House, Larry Householder, and four others would be charged with racketeering in connection with a $60 million-plus bribe made in exchange for a $1 billion-plus nuclear plant bailout a la House Bill 6 last year. We are going to continue our conversation. If you have questions or comments, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Republican Speaker of the Ohio House, Larry Householder, and four others yesterday were charged with racketeering in connection with a $60 million-plus bribe made in exchange for a $1 billion nuclear plant bailout, a la House Bill 6 last year. U.S. Attorney David DeVillers said millions of those dollars were spent to help the campaigns of 21 candidates in primaries and general elections.
Team Householder was 21 candidates. In 2018, they were running in the primaries as well as the general elections. Millions of dollars went to support those candidates and to attack their rivals to get them elected. It was very successful.
Herb Asher is a political scientist and professor emeritus at Ohio State University. Welcome back, Herb.
Good to be here.
And Andy Chow, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi, Ann.
Andy Chow, House Bill 6 has a long history with lawmakers. That Team Householder was part of the political maneuvers that resulted in its passage, right?
That's right, Ann. And, you know, you and I have talked about this bill many times over the course of the past year and a half, and it's not really that surprising that we're back here talking about it again. It was just that big of a bill. It was a sweeping energy reform, energy policy change. The idea of creating subsidies for the nuclear plants was floating around for several years, really around 2016, 2017. There were lawmakers who were trying to get this quote-unquote bailout passed, and it just did not have any momentum. It didn't have enough support from Republicans or Democrats to really get off the ground or even out of committee. But from several insiders that I talked to last year when we were covering HB 6, they said that the key to getting it moving was to get Householder to be speaker. People remember Householder had a big speaker contest to become speaker against Representative Ryan Smith. And that was kind of the turning point for this issue, where a bill that couldn't even get out of committee in previous years started to get momentum as soon as Speaker Householder took over.
This was clearly Speaker Householder's baby. There was no question about that at the time.
Yeah, this is something, I mean, and you got to remember, yes, it is a nuclear power plant bailout, but it also drastically changed Ohio's renewable energy and energy efficiency policies, rolled back those standards. It eliminated the energy efficiency programs.
Which attracted some votes from the like of Bill Seitz in Cincinnati.
Yes. And it also, this was something that Householder made very clear that it was one of his priorities from the very beginning was to do these things. Because again, not only the nuclear power plant stuff, but First Energy had been advocating for years to get rid of the green energy standards.
You know, Ann?
Yeah, Herb Asher.
Prior to yesterday's revelations, we got to give a lot of credit to the journalists and reporters in the state of Ohio.
Agreed.
Because here are some of the things that we knew. We knew that, in fact, in this speakership battle, that the Householder-backed candidates were, in fact, receiving huge amounts of campaign contributions from quote unquote outside sources. And indeed, most of them did win their primaries. We knew that because of the journalists. We also knew about some of the politics of House Bill 6 and Householder's stance. We knew that. We also knew about the efforts to derail the efforts to repeal House Bill 6, including some of the extraordinarily shabby things that were done. And we also knew that in some way, First Energy Solutions was certainly a very interested party. And in the context of Ohio history and Ohio ethics, as soon as you say First Energy, the light goes on and says, oh, that's the company that has one of the worst track records in terms of its ethical approach to politics. So journalists really got a lot of that out there. But what the FBI really did and the other investigators is they put all the pieces together. They got all the information to say, oh, these various events, they're interconnected. And there's a lot of illegal things going on here. So I give credit to the journalists for providing a lot of the raw material.
But you
now,
know,
the FBI has said, we've just started. And I think every member who received campaign funds from Team Householder, I think probably those funds went to their campaign accounts.
Yes.
And not to any personal accounts. But I'm sure the FBI is going to be looking very, very carefully to make sure that indeed that is the case. And keep in mind here, Householder would have never been speaker had it not been for the support of some Democrats.
Right.
So I think the FBI will certainly be looking to see how do Democrats, if at all, tie into this. So yeah. I think members need to just be looking at their own records, their own conversations, and you know, because I think this is, the FBI said, this is an expanding investigation. And so we'll see where it goes. And as I think you said in the earlier segment, you know, once something like this breaks, more and more people will be coming forward with information.
Andy Chow?
I just wanted to jump off of what Herb said and just include that when it comes to House Bill 6, it wasn't just the Republicans. The majority of the proponents were Republicans, but there were also 9 Democrats that voted for the legislation. And without those 9 Democrats, it would not have been approved in the House. So it did gain some Democratic support as well.
We have an email from Jesse who writes, in his weekly newspaper columns on Ohio politics, journalist Tom Suttis, formerly of the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Ohio University, has been telling us for years that the Ohio State House is owned by utilities, banks, and insurance companies. Finally, it appears that somebody in power might have listened. All of these things that you were talking about, Herb, that reporters were reporting on and journalists were reporting on, it was out there for a long time. We talked about it week after week after week on our weekly reporter roundtable. It's not, I mean, Jesse says it finally appears that somebody in power might have listened. What does this say about the power structure in Ohio writ large? I mean, it's completely controlled by Republicans. We're talking about a former chair of the Ohio Republican Party. All these people know each other. They rub elbows. I mean, but is there any, is it just a sense of complacency? Was it apathy? What do you think?
Well, first of all, keep in mind that in some ways, Larry Householder is a brilliant strategist and tactician. He also plays hardball politics. He knows how to get from point A to point B. You know, when you start talking about bribery here, I'd love to know about the initial conversations. And, you know, did First Energy go to him? Did he go to First Energy? I think there's a lot of the latter that's going on here. So something was put together. And again, the journalists, I think, even though they couldn't go beyond the facts that they had, there were a lot of people who privately thought this really stinks, but they didn't have the smoking gun. They didn't have the ability to do all the wiretaps, the phone listening, the text cover, you know, and all of that.
Well, I mean, but it is the case
that, you know, that you want, you know, after this is all over, we'll start asking, well, what is there about the ethics laws? What is there about the campaign finance laws?
Right.
And also, you know, I have to worry that as the journalism profession just weakens in terms of sheer numbers, you know, if we didn't have people like Laura and Andy and Ann yourself and others, a lot of the bad things that go on would probably never be discovered. So it's really critical that we have a strong and free press.
This is a textbook example these allegations of the dangers of and the reason why good government activists oppose dark money. Mm-hmm. We can't know who's behind these things, and that's the beginning of the problem. It wasn't always that way, right, Herb?
That's right. And it's not that we can't know. It's that they have no obligation to report and reveal that. And it's almost impossible for people in the journalism profession to invest the resources to try to track this down. And that's when the federal government and other governmental agents can come in and invest hours and millions in terms of trying to track this down. But you're right, Dan. The dark money really allows so many things to happen. And these 504c3s are, you know, which are presumably for social welfare benefits. Mm. It's just a sham. So I think you want to also be looking at federal laws. In fact, in this case, mainly federal laws.
Mm-hmm. And Anne?
Yeah.
You know, again, kind of recalling the conversations we've had about this over the past year is we would talk about Generation Now. And even when we would talk about it, we would say Generation Now, which is, you know, presumably funded by First Energy Corp or First Energy Solutions, but no one, you know, had the proof that that was the case, only that, you know, if Generation Now is getting millions of dollars, what company would put millions of dollars into it other than mm-hmm. what company has that kind of money in the investment? So that's according to the affidavit that the prosecutors put out there. They're finally connecting the two, allegedly connecting the two.
We have emails from Akron, Knox County, maybe Maumee up in Northwest Ohio. We are going to continue our conversation, and we're going to bring joining us coming up will be the executive director of Common Cause Ohio, Catherine Turser. So stand by. We'll try to get it all done. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. U.S. Attorney David DeVillers on Tuesday outlined the racketeering case against Republican Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder and four others in what DeVillers described as probably the largest public corruption case in state history.
You know what makes me angry is we have limited resources. We have in Franklin County, all of a sudden, District Ohio, we have a just massive overdose epidemic where we've got people dying of fentanyl, people stacking up like cordwood at our coroner's office. We've got a violent crime rate skyrocketing. We've got two Franklin County Sheriff's deputies shot this morning in Columbus. We got cases with real victims. And we have to take our resources away from those real victim cases and investigate and prosecute some politicians who just won't do their damn job.
Still with us, Andy Chow, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Herb Asher, professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State. Catherine Turser is the executive director of Common Cause Ohio, a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy organization that works to strengthen public participation in democracy. She is the author of a number of studies about money and politics, including the 2019, quote, Connecting the Dots, First Energy, Political Dollars, Profits, and Utility Policy. Prescient, Catherine Turser, welcome to the show.
Well, I don't know how prescient I was, but thank you very much for inviting me on. I think it's very clear that out in the public, there was a lot of information, and that we knew there was a problem. There was so much smoke. We knew there had to be fire.
And what was your reaction to the charges yesterday and going forward?
So I think like most people, I was both surprised and then not surprised.
Right.
It was very clear, you know, when you followed what was going on with House Bill 6 and the Generation Now ads, and it's funny, I was looking at some of the Generation Now ads earlier today, and the ones from spring of 2019 were really focused on clean energy. And this is so galling. There was literally one that was clean energy and clean air begins with clean government. Think about the irony of that.
If the allegations are true, I'll keep covering, you know, myself in this score. But if the allegations are true, I mean, they must have just been laughing at voters behind their backs.
I think the thing that's really clear to me is that there are real victims here. You know, when I listen to the quote from the Attorney General, DeVere's
U.S. Attorney, yeah.
I had that sense of okay, he's talking about real victims, but in this case, the real victims are all Ohioans. That in fact, you know, $60 million to bail out, you know, First Energy Solutions. You know, we're talking about $1.3 billion that affects consumers all over the state, and they're real victims. And, you know, we can actually start by looking at what is out there now, what we know now. And what is clear is that we need to do something about dark money, that we should be able to follow the money and judge for ourselves the merits of different conflicting arguments when it comes to all sorts of policymaking. Otherwise, it's very easy for our lawmakers to engage in shenanigans.
David in California, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Yeah, I was wondering if there could be criminal charges brought against First Energy. Out here in California, you're certainly aware that we've had wildfires caused by Pacific Gas and Electric.
Right.
And they are a criminal operation, and the Public Utilities Commission out here has said it many times that they embezzle the money for the tree trimming. They embezzle the money for the pipeline repairs. They embezzle the money. They give it out to themselves as dividends. And then when the city or the state loses, you know, tens of thousands of houses from wildfires and whatnot, that there actually is now criminal activity on the part of the power company out here.
Let's see what Andy Chow, any thoughts about that? Have they talked about that?
Yeah, so what we are hearing from different sources is that First Energy has been subpoenaed in this case. DeVillers has said that there are more charges to come. And I think that we're going to get a more clear investigation here, maybe connecting the dots. And it's very likely that it's possible First Energy could be rolled into this at some point.
Okay. David, thanks. Yeah. Herb Asher.
Over the years, again, First Energy has been one of the most skillful players in this shabby lobbying game for decades. And so one of the questions that the FBI, I think, will be looking at is, okay, who in the corporation authorized this? Who knew about this? Who, in fact, were the actual people dispensing dollars? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, once you start asking those questions, there'll be some responsibility that will fall on First Energy or its associates or affiliates or whatever, because they're not clean in this. The question becomes, does it go to the very top of the corporation?
Let's see. I want to get to John in Akron. You're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi. How you doing? This is John.
Hi, John.
I love your show. You know, the thing is, we have to realize I watch your show all the time. And our politicians, our leaders, and our representatives, they must be transparent with the people. And no wonder the people is losing confidence because of the deceitful methods that these corporations is doing. They say they're going to assist the people in cleaner air and other adventures. But what they do is technically they are making a lot of embezzlement through the trying to cover everything up, and it's all gonna blow up in your face. Hmm. And I think the First Energy and all these corporations are gonna be liable, and people is out there starving to death.
Okay.
They can't even make sense meet.
All right.
And we get corruption in the system. And I love your show, and I would love to be on your show. And
Okay, well, John, we're running out of time, and I want to ask, Catherine Tercer, we talk about dark money. We know it was a Supreme Court decision, though, that said that this is okay. What do you do about that?
So I actually think that's not quite right.
Okay.
So Citizens United said, hey, corporations have First Amendment rights. And lots of us would say, well, that's absolutely ridiculous. If you can't vote,
they're people
lead,
too, kind of a thing, right?
They're people too. Okay. But let's set that aside for a minute.
Okay.
The other thing that Citizens United said in an 8-1 majority is that prompt disclosure of expenditures can provide shareholders and citizens with information needed to hold corporations and elected officials accountable.
Okay.
So in other words, they highlighted again that disclosure is constitutional. And so one of the things that we got is the worst of both worlds. We got the ability for corporations to spend unlimited amounts on political advertisements at the same time as we didn't get the kind of information that we would need so that we could evaluate what was in front of us or the arguments that they were making. And so I want to highlight again that Citizens United was in 2010. Our legislature had an opportunity to act at that point to pass good disclosure. So did Congress. But let's just focus on the state legislature. In fact, what happened is it was, in fact, good disclosure was actually passed in the Ohio Senate, which was Republican at that time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't passed in the Democratic House. And so, part of that had to do with, John Husted, who's now our lieutenant governor, was, working his way to be Secretary of State. And my guess is the Democrats didn't want to give him a win. Mm-hmm. But we are all left with no good disclosure. And it's been 10 years. Good heavens. It's time to actually take that up so that we can follow the money. There's no reason for us to be in this position right now. Ohioans just deserve better. Yeah.
John in Akron, I am so glad you love the show. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for that call. I want to get to Linda in Knox County. Now, Linda, we're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ann.
Sure.
I just wanted to emphasize to you, Ann, to Andy, and your guests that we in Ohio voters, we recognize that the independent reporting that you do is our only resource for facts about Ohio government. We count on you. And voters are, if we have the right information from reporters, are willing to help do some of the informal legwork. For instance, you said earlier that it's publicly available information that who the 21 people are. I'm pretty good on the internet, but I can't find that.
Okay.
And I hope you all will be Johnny on the spot to let us know. Yeah. I want to know if my representative is among them.
And Linda, thank you so much.
And
Andy,
we can put that
Andy
out,
Ann. Yeah.
I just don't want to just, if I don't have all of them, I don't want to just name one or two.
Yeah.
So, but we have that list somewhere we can put it out.
That will be coming out. I can't imagine how it couldn't. Linda, thank you so much for that call. And Andy Chow, this story is, I have a COVID-19 fact sheet in front of me. I'm now going to have a fact sheet on this. There's so many moving parts, but thank you for your insights today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann.
And also Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State University. I'm going to be talking to you on Columbus on the Record this week. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you.
And Catherine Tercer, Executive Director of Common Cause Ohio. Once again, always appreciate your insights, Catherine, and we'll call on you soon again as this thing unfolds.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, thanks a lot for your time today. Thanks for listening and sharing your time with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.